The Bible's over the book of Job. Coming to the end of our study. We should finish the book tonight. But before we do, let's kind of go back and just look at a couple of things Job had said earlier on in all of these various conversations that have been had. Go back to chapter 9. Job chapter 9. This is Job. This is his response to Bildad in verse 32. Pick up with me there. Job 9, verse 32. He is not a man, talking about God. He is not a man as I am, that I should answer him, and that we should come together in judgment. So here's Job saying, you know, God is not, he's not like the next door neighbor. If he and I have a problem, we can knock on each other's door and we can sit on the front porch and we can work it out. See, God is not a man. I can't go and just connect to him and we figure this thing out. Look in verse 33. Neither is there, the old King James uses an outdated word. The old King James uses the word days man. But the newer versions will say mediator. Some of them even say umpire. You know, think about what an umpire does between a team or between a coach that's upset or whatever. I can't just go meet him somewhere and we hash it out. Neither do I have a mediator. Look how verse 33 ends. Neither is there a mediator between us that might lay his hand on us both. So here's Carla, and she's upset with James, and so I come in, and I put my hand on both of them, and we work it out. We don't have that either. I can't go get him. He's not a man. I go talk to. I can't just go knock on his door. Nor is there a mediator that can unite us. Now, of course, we make that application. We know who a mediator was that did that very thing. But this is Job in the midst of some of his turmoil and some of these answers. There is this estrangement between us. I can't go get him. I'm not. There's no mediator to do it for me. So that's in Job 9. Look in chapter 13. This will be after Zophar. So this that at the end of the third guy, the third friend. So I mean, he has heard it all by now. And here's where he is at this point. Job 13. Look in verse 3. Surely I would speak to the Almighty. I desire to reason with God. Hey, I've had enough of my buddy. I've talked to you guys enough. Here's what I want. I want to talk to God. I want to plead myself to Him. I want to, verse 3, I want to reason with Him. Oh, if I could just tell Him my side. If I could just plead my case to Him. Well, now turn back to where we left off. In chapter 38, what does Job have? Where is he? You want to talk to me? Here I am. He's got exactly what he had been pleading for. I just wished I could knock on his door and go talk to him like a man. I wished I could just face to face, eyeball to eyeball. I wished I could just reason with him. Give him my side of this thing. And in chapter 38, where we left off at last week, the Lord, verse 38, the Lord answers. Verse 3, gird up your loins like a man. I will demand of you and you will answer me. Okay, you want to talk to me? Here I am. You want to plead your case before me? Plead away. Look in chapter 40. Again, we looked at this last week. Look in verse 2. Actually, verse 1 more, the Lord answered Job and he said, shall he contend with the Almighty? Newer versions use the phrase, will you instruct? Are you going to instruct me? That last phrase, are you going to argue with me? Oh, I just wish I could see him. Wish I could talk to him. Wish I could just, here I am. Tell me my fault. Here I am. Tell me what I've done that was wrong, if you can. And that question there in chapter 40, that comes after 70-something questions in chapter 38 and 39 that Job would have no idea how to answer. And so that's what chapter 38 and 39 is God show. Oh, you want to talk to me? Okay, well, let's get some groundwork. Let's figure out exactly what you do know. Let's figure out what you do understand. And so he asked over 70 questions. Back in fact, chapter 38, remember the outline of chapter 38 and 39? In chapter 38, verse 4, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me what you know about it. And then he spends about 20 verses talking about that very thing. Here's what I did. Where were you? Here's what I did. Do you understand that? Here's what I did. Were you there? He talks about the terra firma. He talks about the land, the earth. In verse 19, where is the way where the light dwells? And now he's talking about what we would call solar system, sky, the above. He's talking about the moon, the stars. Remember, we looked at a couple of constellations he called by name. He called out some stars. And so he tell me what you know about how I made this earth. Tell me about how I formed land and everything in it. Oh, you don't understand that. Okay, well, tell me about what you know about what we would call solar system, outer space. Tell me what you know about that. Oh, you don't. Okay. Verse 39, tell me what you know about the animal kingdom. How they do things that they were never trained to do. They just instinctively do. They know how to survive and provide for themselves. He talks about the lion. He talked about in chapter 39, all those wild animals. Not talking about a shepherd that gets led to food. Not talking about your pet that you do all the work for. You lay food out in front of them four times a day and give them treats and get them shots. And wild animals. And yet they are taken care of. Tell me, explain that to me, Job. And then he comes back to chapter 40. And of course the answer to all those question marks, 70-something question marks in chapter 38 and 39. Tell me what you know. Tell me how I did this. Tell me when I did this. Tell me why. 70-something questions that Job can't answer, and neither can we. And now the conclusion of that paragraph is chapter 40, verse 8. Will you disannul my judgment? Will you condemn me? You can't answer any of this stuff. And yet you think you have the right? You can't explain how I did it. You can't explain my reasoning, my mind, my power, my understanding, my knowledge. You don't know any of that. And yet you are going to question my judgment and my justice in order for your righteousness to shine. Oh, you want to talk to me? Okay, talk to me. Give me an answer. And to Job's credit, remember what he did in verse 5. Verse 4. What did he say to all these questions? I'm going to what? I will be quiet. I will hush. I put my hand over my mouth. So that's where we left off at. We left off at, tell me how I did the earth. Tell me how I did the skies, the where the lights are. Tell me about the animal kingdom. Tell me how I did that. Surely you know. And then he leaves the animal kingdom, so to speak, and he begins to talk about these other beasts. In bad chapter breaks, it would have been really nice if chapter 40, verse 15, had become chapter 41. It would have been nice if starting in verse 40, verse 15, that had been a new thought, because it kind of is. He begins talking about these two beasts. One is a land beast and one is a sea beast. In chapter 40, verse 15, one is called the behemoth. In chapter 41, verse 1, the other is called Leviathan. And that's what he calls them. Now, the point thus far is, Job, you can't describe this. You have no idea. You don't understand the wisdom that went into it. You don't understand the power that made it happen. You don't know how creation came about and how it continues to do. You don't get it. You can't get it. And not only do you not understand it, there are parts about it you don't have any control over either. You're not as powerful as you think. You don't have all the answers to things. Even you can't explain creation, and you don't have a power over it all either. And he gives these two examples of that. Now, the interesting thing, and you may have saw this, and a lot of rabbits to chase on this, that a lot of people want to describe and define what the behemoth is. Don't play that game. That's not the point. That's not the important point. Trying to put a name with a DNA on what Leviathan is. Don't do that. It's not important what it is. It's not important what they are. What's important is what they mean. This book is part of the poetry. And when poetic language gets involved, things kind of get a little flowery. And they get descriptive. It's not... The two I will throw out. If you do a lot of reading on it. What a lot of people will say, a lot of comments, oh, the behemoth. Oh, just read through the description. Oh, God is describing the hippopotamus. If you did a lot of reading, I bet you saw that. When it gets to the Leviathan, oh, just read the description. God is talking about the alligators, the crocodiles. God didn't have a bit of a problem calling a lion, and a goat a goat. And what else do we see in chapter 39? An ostrich an ostrich, and a horse, and a hawk a hawk. He didn't get to this point and say, man, what's that animal called? And he's going to give some nickname. No, he's talking symbolically. He's talking about there are parts of creation that you can't control, Joe. The word for a behemoth literally just means beast. But look in verse 15. It's talking about a beast on the land. Behold now the behemoth, which I made with you. He eats grass. It's symbolic. It's poetic. But what he's an earth animal. He is a land animal. Look at some of the descriptions of him. Verse 6. His strength. His force. His muscles. He's talking about a beast that is powerful. Look at verse 18. I know nobody thinks this is literal. The people who are trying to call this a hippopotamus, I know we know this is not literal. Verse 18. His bones are strong as brass. His bones are like bars of iron. We have all experienced symbolic language. It's enough to know it when we see it. Don't try to take this behemoth and try to figure out what animal is being described. There is no animal being described. What's being described is something more powerful than you, Job. Something you couldn't stop with a machine gun. In chapter 41, he gets to the Leviathan. This is a sea beast. And by the way, is there another book that symbolically talks about land beast and sea beast? Revelation. We shouldn't have a problem with this. We've experienced it before in other parts of Scripture. Here's a sea beast. Cast any fishers in here. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? You're going to go to the river and catch him? You're going to go to the sea and the lake and catch him? And or his tongue with a cord which you've let down? Okay, you throw it out, you throw the hook out, and you pull him in. Then you wrap him up. Tie him off. Did you think you're going to do that? Look in verse 3. You've tied him off, this sea beast. You catch him with a hook. You tie him up with a cord. Will he make supplication to you? Will he speak soft words to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him for a servant forever? So picture this sea beast that you pull out. Oh, I caught you, buddy. You belong to me now. You do what I say. You work for me. You're going to serve me. Did you think that's what's going to happen? And then look in verse 14. Talks about his terrible teeth. In verse 28... Your arrow cannot make him run. Your stones will not turn him to stubble. Your clubs are what will be counted as stubble. He laughs at your spears. He's not trying to describe some animal that God just can't pull the name out of. No, what he's saying is, there are things out there, Job, and they're a lot more powerful than you. You can't scare them. You can't run them off. You can't beat them into submission. You can't wrap them up and make them become your minion. No, they're more powerful than you. Now, what's the point? Again, forget the hippopotamus and forget the crocodile. We understand symbolism better than that. Turn to Isaiah 27. Isaiah 27. Leviathan, powerful being, powerful part of creation that man can't control, that man can't tie up. You can't catch him and make him become yours. Look at another description of him. And then we can figure out some symbolism and we can figure out some poetic language and what exactly is being meant. Isaiah 27, verse 1. In that day, the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword. Now, we just found out in Leviticus, or not Leviticus, I got the Leviathan on my mind. The Leviathan will take your spears and your arrows and your stones and turn them to stubble. You can't control him, Job. But there's a Lord who can. In that day, the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword will punish Leviathan, the piercing what? Serpent. Even Leviathan, that crooked serpent. And he will slay what? The dragon in the sea. Oh, now wait a minute. Is it Leviathan a serpent? Or is he... Leviathan is a beast that we can't control. But who can? The Lord can. Your swords will be turned to stubble. My sword will not. And the point... Now go back to Job. The point is... Who's been working the puppet strings of Job's misery? Satan. The serpent. The dragon. A part of creation that me and you and all of our wisdom and all of our learning and all of our studying and all of our... We can't control him. We can't wrap him up. We can't catch him, wrap him up, put him on the deck, and think that he's no longer going to... The point is, Job, you don't understand how creation even came about. You don't have a clue about what I did. You don't understand the power that was included in it and that was overseeing it and continues to... You don't understand it. And there are parts of it you can't control, you can't stop, you can't do a thing to. I can. That's the point of that. You don't understand it, and yet you're going to tell me how to control it? You're going to tell me I can best do it? You're going to tell me that I did something wrong? When you go back to chapter 42, which where we are, that's the idea that we're looking at. That's the part about Leviathan and about the behemoth that we need to take from it. Don't drive yourself crazy. It said about this about the teeth. Now, what animal has that teeth? And what about this skin? The point is, there's parts, Job, you don't have power over. There's parts, Job, you can't control. Not only can you not understand it, you can't control it. I do understand it. I do have power over it. How about a little trust? Instead of questioning, instead of wanting to, as you said in chapter 13, argue with me, how about let me do what I do? How about trust me that I can understand it and I can do what you can't? Pretty blunt. Job has... Elihu just ripped the scabs off. God's throwing salt in the scabs. And this would be hard to hear because all you can say is, that's right. And I hope that's why you love Job, because that's exactly what he's going to say. Look in chapter 42. Then Job answered the Lord and he said, I know that you can do everything and that no thought can be withheld from you. In verse 3, unless you have a pretty up-to-date, maybe very few, I guess what I'm trying to say, very few translations put quotation marks in Bibles. Verse 3 is a quotation. Job is quoting God. Look in verse 3. Who is he that hides counsel without knowledge? Go back to chapter 38. Job is about to answer God's question. I haven't been able to answer all those other ones. I can answer this one. Chapter 38, look in verse 3. Gird up your loins like a man. I will demand of you. Answer me. Look in verse 2. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Go back to chapter 42. Is that not what he just said? Who is he that hides counsel without knowledge? God, here's what you ask. Here's what you said. Here's the question. I can answer that for you. It was me. I'm the one who did that. Who is he that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered what I understood not. Things too wonderful for me to know. Who you ask God, you ask him. You ask who was all that, where's this counsel coming from? It's darkness because there's no light in it. It's counsel, but there's no wisdom in it. I'm guilty. I'm the one who did that. I was talking about things I had no clue about. I was challenging you about things I have no idea about. Verse 4, this is a quotation mark. Listen, I beseech you, and I will speak. I will demand of you, declare it unto me. Go back to chapter 4. I'm sorry, chapter 40. There's the quotation on that. No, that was chapter 38, verse 3. I read that earlier at a place. I will demand of you, answer me. Chapter 38, verse 3. Now here's Job quoting that in chapter 42, verse 4. I demand of you, speak to me, answer me this. Verse 5. I have heard of you by the hearing of your ear, but now my eye sees you. Excuse me. That doesn't mean eyeball to eyeball. That doesn't mean that what he's saying is, I understand things I used to not understand. He's not talking about literally seeing God face to face. We know from the Exodus period that would lead to death. Verse 5, Lord, I've heard. But now I see. I've got a scratch in my throat. I'm sorry. I'm having to keep coughing. I see things now I used to not see. I understand things now I used to not understand. Verse 6. I despise myself. I repent in dust and ashes. This is why we love Job. He has said some things very strongly. He has challenged God in several ways. Elihu called him out on it. But here's who he is. He doesn't deny it. He doesn't exaggerate about it. He doesn't say, oh, you took me out of context. No, he said, I spoke when I shouldn't have. I talked about things I didn't have a clue about. And I'm sick of it. I despise that I did that. I'll never do that again. And now verse 7, 8, 9. I think this is one of your questions on your outline. Question 6 on your outline. What was his friends? What were they told to do? Yeah. You talk about justifying somebody in another's eyes. To those three friends who have been pulling him over the coals. Look in verse 7. And so it is that after the Lord had spoken these words to Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz, my wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends. For you have not spoken of me the thing that is right as my servant Job has. Therefore, take unto you now 7 bulls, 7 rams. Go to my servant Job and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering. My servant Job shall pray for you. For him I will accept. lest I deal with you after your folly. Oh, by the way, you three guys, if you want to come to me how? You come to me through Job. They had a lot of things to say about Job. You've got to be the center of sinners. For this to be going on, wow, what did you do? If you want to come to me, you come to me through him. In verse 9, that's exactly what they do. Eliphaz, the Temanite, Bildad, Zophar. They went and did according as the Lord commanded them, and the Lord accepted Job. So you've got this double whammy of, hey, Job, I'm forgiving you for what you said. And you forgive them what they said. They're going to come to you. You serve them. You sacrifice this for them. I will honor and recognize you. And so those other three, if you want me, you come through him. And then you have, I guess, what we might call the restoration. That might not be the exact best phrase to use. But it's almost like the reset button gets pushed. When this chapter ends, it's like you go back to chapter 1 where you began. Here's where it starts. Look in verse 10. The Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. And the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then came there unto him all his brethren, all his sisters, all those that had been acquaintances before. They ate bread in his house. They moaned with him. They comforted him, etc., etc. In chapter 1, we met Job, and it talked about him being, so to speak, above all. He was the most recognized. He was the most, in every way you could elevate yourself, he had elevated himself. But do you remember, I think it was in the third series of speeches, he was describing what his life was like when all this hit. And he made note of the fact, he said, there are prisoners who are thought of better than me. There are scoundrels who make fun of me. I am the one that's the joke of the town. I am now below people begging on the street corners. I'm below thieves. What happens in chapter 11? He's restored to his place where? How would you describe it? Yeah, he's restored to the way of life. He's restored to his community, so to speak. He's now back. Oh, God was with him. We were wrong about that. Job was the righteous one. And that no longer is the jokes happening. No longer is he looked down on anymore. The community, he's restored there. Okay, let's talk about possessions. What about that? Does that get restored? In verse 12, the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than the beginning. He was already, chapter 1, called the richest in the area. What happens? Gets even more. Everything doubled. We're not going to take the time. If you want to go back when you get home, you can go back to chapter 1 and you can just, from chapter 1 to chapter 42, and you'll see the numbers. Everything doubled in this verse. The latter end blessed more than the beginning. For he had 14,000 sheep. In chapter 1, he had 7,000. 6,000 camels. In chapter 1, he had 3. 1,000 yoke of oxen. He started out with 500. And 1,000 donkeys. He had 500. So everything doubled. And then interestingly enough, do you remember how many kids he had in chapter 1? 10. That one didn't double. Look in chapter 13, or verse 13. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. That is exactly what he had then. That's the only thing that didn't double. Now here's the interesting thought. I'm not telling you what it means. I'm telling you it's just an interesting thought. There's no indication that Job or his family were not faithful people. As a matter of fact, in chapter 1, it talked about them getting together. And they would go, you know, 7 brothers. So 7, I mean, every day they got together with one of the family. Brother 1, or son 1, son 2, son 1 through 7. They got together, had a feast with the family every week at one of those sons. And then it talked about at the end of that cycle that Job offered a sacrifice for the family in case there had been any sin. So let's believe from that. They died in the Lord. Which means when those fires happened and the hurricanes and the tornadoes and all those ways of destruction happened, when he lost 10 kids, if they died in the Lord, they're in paradise. If these 10 die in the Lord, in paradise, what's he got? 20. Maybe not in the flesh, but in paradise. 10 prior, 10 after. The only thing that didn't double is the kids. But in eternity, here they are. What a wonderful thought. Again, I'm not saying that's what it's saying. What is a fact is the kids are the only thing that didn't double. And if they're all found faithful, he's with them right now. That doubling of the cows, doubling of the donkeys, doubling of the what? Dust. If those 20 kids were faithful, he's with them right now. What a wonderful thought that can be. In verse 15, talks about the daughters. He kind of bucks tradition here. In verse 15, it doesn't mention the sons, but all three daughters are called by name. And at the end of verse 15, speaking of those three daughters, their father gave them inheritance among the brethren. But not only did the seven sons get an inheritance, but so did the three girls. That was a little bit contrary to the custom at that time. It's interesting that we find that out. Verse 16. After this, Job lived to be 140 years old. So that he died at 140, right? Is that what that says? No. What does that mean? Yeah. After this period, after this stuff that we have been spending 3 or 4 months covering, he lived 140 years after that. That's why I teach that this is a part of the patriarchal days. You don't see days like that after the patriarchal days. You don't, even at the end of the patriarchal days, you're not seeing numbers like that. Abraham died at 175. Isaac was 180. Jacob was 147. That's patriarchal days. You go into the Mosaic law after the law was given. Moses was 120. You come in to the kingdom period, David was 70. I mean, those after the flood, I mean, ages, it was a straight line going downward. I don't know how old Job was when this got started. That part we don't know. But he was old enough to have elevated himself to the community. He was old enough to have been married with 10 kids. I don't know how old he was. He wasn't 16. And when all this was said and done, he lived 140 years after that. So obviously this is talking about patriarchal days. That's why he could be called a priest in chapter 1 without it mentioning him being a part of the tribe of Levi. He predated that. But 140 years he lived afterward, 4 generations. God blessed him. And so there's so, so many things for us to take from this by way of application. So here's what we're going to do. Next week, we're going to just, okay, we have looked at the book. We have gone through and worked our way through the conversations. And what we will do next week is we're just going to look at some applications of it. Okay. Now that we have studied it, now that we've got a good idea of now, okay, what does that mean to me? What does that mean to you? That's what we'll do next week, Lord willing. But Bell's about going to ring any second now. Any questions on anything we looked at tonight?
Julian? It's interesting that Job wasn't acceptable to the Lord until after he repented. Yeah. And after he repented, yeah, these blessings came.
Yeah.
Then the three friends repented by their act.
Yeah.
And everything's okay.
That's a great point. Verse 6, I'm going to lay in the ash a little bit. I'm going to repent. Sackcloth and ashes. And then, now, you can offer sacrifices again. Hey, if you three won't, go through him. That's exactly right. Repentance. At any point, patriarchal, Mosaic, the dispensation, repentance has always been a part of it. That's exactly right. There was no law of God that didn't have a change of heart that was necessary. Any other questions about Job's chapter 38 through 42? Next week, we'll just kind of generically look back. We've gone through it. Now, next week, we'll start looking specifically at some applications from it. I hope that'll be a benefit.